WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Motown Records in the 1960s created a sound that combined soul music with polished production. There was a Motown look, too. Stylish choreography, sophisticated clothes. Several Motown artists have written memoirs about what happened behind the scenes of the celebrated Detroit record company. In fact, the founder of the company, Berry Gordy, has a memoir that's about to be published. My guest, Martha Reeves, has just completed her autobiography. Martha and the Vandellas hits included Dancing in the Streets, Heat Wave, Jimmy Mack, and Quicksand. This song, Come and Get These Memories, was their first hit.
Here's your
Now, this song was written by Holland Dozier and Holland, and really most of your hits were written by that songwriting team. Did you get along especially well? Did you especially like the songs they wrote for you?
I love them. They were great writers, and they were also very good-looking men. As a matter of fact, on Come and Get These Memories, they made me so nervous. I asked if they would turn the lights off and start the machine and leave the studio so that I wouldn't see them, so that I could sing Love Makes You Do Foolish Things.
Now, you had to go to the so-called Motown finishing school, right?
We all were nurtured at Motown. Berry was very ingenious to hire some very affluent people to train us. Mrs. Powell came from Chicago, and she was one of the top model instructors in Detroit.
This was Maxine Powell.
Maxine Powell. She'd also trained Gwen Gordy, Anna Gordy, Esther Edwards, Berry's older sisters, and she was also responsible for some of the top models of Detroit and their success.
So she was the person who taught etiquette and poise and all of that. And she was really trying to teach the groups how to be very sophisticated. I was wondering if you ever wanted to be more raw and streetwise than she was comfortable with, more like some of the more Southern soul singers, or more like the Ronettes or the Shangri-Las, who had a more street kind of image.
I'm very proud to be a part of the Motown sound, and I've heard that the Motown artists all have a certain rapport, and I think it's basically because she tutored not only the women, but the men, and taught us how to be respectful. She gave us tips on how to establish class, poise, finesse, things that are necessary when you're traveling all over the world and dealing with a variety of people. I've never wanted to be anything but a part of the Motown sound.
I was reading an interview that Maxine Powell had done for People magazine, and she said some of the advice that she used to give the Motown recording artists was, you never turn your back on the audience, you never let your buttocks protrude. Do you remember that advice?
I remember her saying that we weren't the most beautiful women in the world, and we certainly weren't the most talented women in the world, but with what she could teach us, we could go all over the world. She would teach us poise and class that would take us before queens and kings, and we'd never feel as if we didn't know how to handle ourselves properly. Yes, she would make comments about making faces on stage. She made comments about having your buttocks protrude, but no one wants to really sit and watch a show and see that.
Now, the first big Motown tour helped launch your career and the careers of a lot of the other Motown performers. It was a 3-month-long tour. What year was this?
1962.
And before you went on tour, you got your warnings from Berry Gordy about how to behave. There was a chaperone who accompanied you.
We had two chaperones and one man for the men. Thomas Beams Bowles, whose idea the Motown Review was also there to watch and make sure that we did what we were told.
What were you warned about in terms of behavior?
Well, the first thing he did was make a joke about the Contours being dirty old guys and to watch out for them. And they were the least of the ones to worry about. They were very friendly and very helpful. We learned to get along with all the acts, and we grew as a group. We were a big family, and we looked out for one another. We learned to share sardines and popcorn together as a meal.
Salty.
We learned to eat hot. Yeah, we learned to eat hot dogs that were cold and hot chocolate that was cold at the back door of establishments together. We learned how to hold our water because some people wouldn't let us off the bus to use their restrooms because of our color and thinking that we were Martin Luther King's freedom riders and came to cause trouble as opposed to come and make merriment.
How was the Motown bus confused with the freedom riders?
Because we were all black people.
Your bus was shot at, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. The bus was shot at, and it is just as Marvin and Mary Wells, who were singing together at the time, walked past the front of it. I fell on the floor, and Mary laughed. She said, "Look at Martha. She's so silly. Those were only firecrackers." And the next day, when the bus driver dug three bullets out of the sign that said Motown Review, I had the last laugh.
My guest is Martha Reeves, and she has a new memoir called Dancing in the Streets. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Martha Reeves, who recorded a lot of hits for Motown Records. You toured during the summer where there was a lot of riots in the North. And in fact, you were performing in Detroit when you had to announce on mic that the city was burning down and people should go home. Do you remember what you were singing, what you said, and how you chose your words?
I was so excited at the Fox Theater to sing Jimmy Mac because that was our first, that was our next release, our newest song. Just before I was about to sing it, I was summoned from the wings to come here. And I went over to see what it was and was told, "You've got to tell a theater full of enthusiastic fans that the city was under arrest. There was a curfew and everybody had to get home and half of it was burning." I don't know what I said, but I did deliver it without having a panic arise. There was no one running from that theater. Everybody literally walked out calmly, and we all got home eventually to our loved ones and homes as the city burned. There were frightening times, and I was thankful when Dancing in the Street came out because it sort of helped get everybody back together in that right frame of mind to party together and forget about all the unrest. It settled things, and everybody finally got it out of their system. The riots did a lot of good, you know, with all the damage. I hope you can understand what I'm saying. It let a lot of people's anger out, and after everything calmed down, we saw that all we did was hurt each other and tear up some property, and we've got to live down here together no matter what it takes, so we might as well get on with life and just dance in the street and party, because, hey, baby, we're stuck with one another. Here we are.
Dancing in the Streets is a song about dancing and partying in the streets. Some people really saw it as a song that was associated with the riots, that was almost like a call to riot.
It was after the riots.
The song?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you make
of
people who saw that association?
That's one of the reasons why I wrote my book. I have to set the record straight. Mm-hmm. I've been accused of being some kind of leader. I wish my followers would get with me because I'm out here on my own.
I'd like you to tell us how you first recorded Dancing in the Streets.
My song... Dancing in the Street was not mine in the beginning. Marvin Gaye wrote it, along with William Stevenson and Ivy Hunter. Marvin had sang it similar, like a sort of like, "Calling out around the world, are you ready for a brand new beat, baby?" That's sort of his style, right? Well, it didn't fit me. It wasn't in the right key for me. And I said, well, I don't really like the idea of dancing in the street. But then when I thought about it, I had been to Rio de Janeiro. I had been to New Orleans. I saw people dancing freely in the street and having a real good time. So I said, yeah, I can sing it, but let me sing it my way. The first take, they were amazed. The second take was the one we kept.
Let's hear it. This is Martha Reeves, Dancing in the Streets. Martha Reeves, when you were at Motown. What did you think of as being the look and the sound of your group, Martha and the Vandellas, and how that compared to, say, the other girl groups at Motown?
I first have to explain that I'm a country bumpkin. I came from Eufaula, Alabama. I knew nothing about the city or the styles of the city. And I always thought that something glimmering that fit a neat little body like the one I used to have. I'm a little heavy now. But I used to have the tiniest of waist and the cutest hips. And I have bow legs. And I thought I looked good in a lot of the things that I wore. I didn't know about the look or image. That wasn't important to me. What was important to me was singing. And singing songs from my soul that touched other people. That's where my emphasis was.
Were a lot of the other women at Motown not from the country like you were?
None of them were.
None of them were.
The Vandellas were born and raised in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
The Supremes were born and raised in Detroit. The Marvelettes were born and raised in Inkster.
So did you feel real different from them?
I felt different from everyone in the city. Not just the singers, everybody. I felt really out of place in the city. I went south every summer until my grandparents died.
Now, how do you think that difference showed up in your voice?
I had a real thick southern accent until I went to Lee Strasberg's Theater Institute. I got rid of that because people laughed at me. And I tell them I was from Eufaula, and it even happened today. Somebody said, "You what?" This is so far and so remote. But I soon adjusted, and now I'm proud. I've been inducted into the Alabama Music Hall of Fame. I've gotten the Governor's Award, so I'm proud now. And I've reclaimed my birthplace, and I'm glad to have been raised in Detroit. And I feel I'm a part of the world, not just the South or the North or East or West, because our music is all over the world.
Martha Reeves is my guest. She's written an autobiography called Dancing in the Street. More in a minute. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Martha Reeves, the lead singer of the Motown group Martha and the Vandellas. Who did you think of as your allies and competitors at Motown?
I never felt that I had allies or competitors. When we first started, we started out together. We all needed each other to become. The Miracles had a hit record, the Marvelettes had a hit record, and so did Mary Wells. But it took all of us together on a Motown review to set Motown where it became, to establish it as a company making its own music. And it was all headed by Berry Gordy Jr., so it's his dream, and he gets all the credit.
I think you came to feel that Berry Gordy started to show favoritism toward Diana Ross, sometimes at your expense.
I know he did. And not just my expense, but every artist at the company. Berry spent the best years of his young life nurturing and developing talent. He started off with Jackie Wilson, and no one can deny the fact that he was one of the greatest performers in the world. He later on had Barrett Strong sing Money, which went to number one. There was Marv Johnson, who went to number one with You've Got What It Takes. Then Mary Wells hit the charts with Bye Bye Baby. He was making artist after artist, and each artist had to have his direct input. He would come to our shows. He would spend time with us at rehearsal. He hired all the people that trained us. He taught us everything that we know. If he didn't teach it, he was responsible for us getting involved with the teachers that we were exposed to. And I'm just a product of good teachers, and I feel good about that.
Let me get back to Diana Ross. Why did you start to feel that she was his favorite and that was hurting you?
Well, if the baby that they have is not proof enough that she was his pet and special to him, then I guess I should have to say that they formed a relationship that took the business out and I guess made the personal more obvious.
Were you hurt by that?
Oh, yes. Everybody at the company was, even the men who didn't ever think that Barry would be with him. But I didn't love Barry as a husband or boyfriend because I knew his wife. I had been at her recording company and sang a bit back up for J.J. Barnes on the Thelma label prior to coming to Motown Records. So I regarded him in another way. He had always belonged to the lot of us. And all of a sudden, he's a supreme.
You had the reputation for being one of the first or the first outspoken Motown artist about royalties and where the money was going. What led you to speak out about money?
The lack of it.
Did you feel there was money coming to you that you didn't have?
We were selling millions of records, and I had read or deciphered my contract wrong. I thought I was getting a third of a dollar.
What were you getting?
I was getting a third of a penny.
Oh. This isn't royalties you're talking about?
I'm talking royalties. And that's what was promised me, and that was what was on the contract that I signed. And I had no idea of show business. I had never known anyone in the business. I had never seen a contract in my life until I typed our names on the one that we signed. So it was all a disillusionment.
How did bringing up money and the fact that you felt you were being shortchanged affect your stay at Motown?
Well, I felt a certain alienation, and there are a lot of things that I've seen happen where we have not been ignored, but just left out of over the years. And I know it's not because of our ability, because I think we hold our own as far as talent is concerned.
How did you leave Motown?
I didn't leave Motown. Motown left me. I was having a baby, and that took me out of society for a minute. Pregnancies will do that. And I wasn't there to hear about the move. I was at home nurturing.
They moved to Los Angeles from Detroit?
Yes, they did, to make movies. It was a move that was necessary because they had outgrown Detroit, in essence.
So you were pregnant and you didn't hear about the move?
No.
And then what happened?
Well, when my baby was born, I wanted to get back into the swing of things. And 2 weeks after he was born, I recorded a song called In and Out of My Life, which was released soon after. And trying to get some response or the continuation of my career, I called and was always told that Mr. Gordy was not available. And I insisted one day to speak to him. Where was he, and could I reach him at another number? And I was informed by the secretary, well, girl, don't you know the company's moved to Los Angeles? When we move these computers out of here, we'll all be moved. And I had to catch up with my life then and go on.
How'd you feel about that?
Well, it was temporary, a temporary backset. You know, but I went straight from there to MCA Records, recorded Richard Perry, and had a very good album on MCA label.
Was it hard for you to establish yourself outside of Motown?
Yes, definitely. There's a Motown sound that we're synonymous for and we're famous for, and people expect that from you. If you're not on Motown, jocks won't even play your music.
Now, do you still live in Detroit?
I live in Detroit downtown. In fact, I'm one of very few of the Motown artists who yet remain in Detroit.
It's funny because you're one of the few Motown artists who wasn't from Detroit.
I mean, right.
You were from the South, but you stayed in Detroit.
My family brought me there, and my family's still there, so I belong there.
So it still feels like your city.
I belong there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to close with another record of yours, with Nowhere to Run.
All right.
Say something about recording this.
I love Nowhere to Run for two or three reasons, more now than ever. Because I talked to a lot of guys who spent their time in the Korean and Vietnam Wars. And they said when it was time for the supplies to come in, they'd line up and fight over the Motown records. And when Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam called our name out real loud, I had the biggest thrill because my son had taken me to the movie and said, Mom, don't jump out of the seat when you hear a certain thing. And it was a big thrill to hear Nowhere to Run.
Martha Reeves' new autobiography is called Dancing in the Street.